One of the things I love about the Bible is that I've read it many times, but every time I read even very familiar passages, something fresh comes out of it. And that's true of the Christmas passages as well that we hear every year at the carol service. And this time, it was a particular line from our reading from Isaiah chapter 9. I don't know whether you noticed it, and it maybe got you thinking. It was the final line. It went like this. The zeal of the Lord Almighty will accomplish this. And I thought, zeal, that's a strange word for Christmas, isn't it? We get the word zealot from that, and zealous. And all of those words conjure up the sense of extremism, that idea of an extreme commitment to a purpose that will give up everything to achieve its end. So what is zeal doing at Christmas? And why is it that it's the zeal of the Lord Almighty? One time when my family were going on holiday, we had a special holiday to Spain. And so that meant we had to get a plane, obviously. And we were going through the security this side. And after my bag went through the sort of X-ray, I was taken to the side. I was patted down, and then I was asked some very serious questions. Why? Because they had found a jar of Marmite in my bag. And that was obviously quite puzzling to me. I thought, well, what's going on here? Is it actually true that, you know, you really either love it or you hate it, and it turns out border agency really hate it? Or is it that they had some sort of intelligence, some security updates that Marmite-loving Church of England clergy were a particular flight risk? I don't know what it was. But actually what it really was, it turns out, was that Marmite is classified as a liquid. And my jar of Marmite, because I cannot go long without Marmite, was too large for hand luggage. So remember that next time you go through airports. And that whole experience, you know, got me thinking about the issue of extremism. And round about that time, something else brought this up. I was in a discussion group. It had been organised by a couple of friends of mine, and they had invited their friends to come and talk to me and ask me questions about being a Christian. And then, sooner or later, they were firing difficult questions at me, which I love. And at one point, they started talking about religious extremism. And really, what a bad thing it was. And they're very passionate about this. They were talking about the wars and the conflict and the suffering that religious extremism has caused. But then they were a terribly polite bunch. And so what they did is they suddenly noticed that, oh, hang on, here we are criticizing Christians and others. We'd better apologize. And so they turned to me, one of them, and said, oh, don't worry, we don't mean you. And on one level, you know, you've got to take something from that and think, well, at least they don't think I'm a terrorist. But actually, I thought, that's kind of like killing with faint praise, isn't it? What I felt really the subtext was, don't worry, David, you're sort of wishy-washy, namby-pamby, wouldn't say a boo to a goose form of religion. That's all right. We don't mean you. So I thought, how am I going to respond to this? And I said two things. The first was that I suspect that if we look at history, as many people have been killed by apathy as by extremism. Apathy, that decision just to stand back because it's not my problem. As many people have been killed by us standing back when there's starvation, standing back when there's oppression, standing back when there's conflict, as have been killed by extremism. But the other thing I said was that told them about one of my great heroes, William Wilberforce. He was an extremist. He had a zeal for his cause. He made it his life's mission, and he gave up huge things for it. What was his life's mission? It was the abolition of slavery. And he kept at it, even though it seemed an impossible dream, an impossible goal. So you see, we've actually become a bit simplistic in our worldview, in our culture, because actually zeal and extremism themselves are not the problem. There is, in fact, an extremism, a zeal, even a zealot, who is very good news. It is when that extreme commitment is made by a good person to a good purpose. And when we look at that baby in the manger, the Lord Jesus, who would grow up and live a life on earth. We are seeing that form of zeal, that form of extremism. So briefly, we're just going to consider two things. What was his good goal, and what was he willing to do for it? Well, the good goal is expressed in our passage. The people walking in darkness have seen a great light. On those living in the land of deep darkness, a light has dawned. There's our problem. We live in darkness. And here we don't mean the darkness that Londoners like myself are used to, where you can still see quite clearly. I mean proper darkness. Darkness of the countryside, where it is actually really frightening if the moon and the stars are shielded. We live in a form of darkness. The darkness of the future, of not knowing what tomorrow brings, but absolutely knowing that one tomorrow will ultimately bring death. The darkness of loss. The darkness of conflict and alienation. The darkness of oppression. But here we discover Jesus' great goal. He is the one who brings victory over that darkness. He is the light that scatters darkness, the joy that bursts out of grief, the peace that crushes conflict. That is the great goal of Jesus' birth and life and death and resurrection. But here's the second thing. What did it take for him to do that? Well, it took total, extreme commitment to that purpose. It took zeal to accomplish it. What did that zeal look like? Well, let's look first at how he's described in our passage. He will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. No less than God himself. Come down in as a human being. And in the pursuit of rescuing us from our darkness, he would give up every one of those names. He would be the mighty God so committed to his mission to save that he gives up his might that created the universe and became a little baby unable to feed itself. And he would go on to allow himself to be made a captive of humanity and his arms, the arms that flung stars into space, to be nailed to a wooden cross. He is the everlasting Father, the Alpha and Omega, the one who has been before all things and will be after all things. The one who is life, who would choose death for us. He is the Prince of Peace, who placed himself in the hands of his enemies, you and me. Why? Because only by doing so would he save us. Jesus held nothing back. He is the ultimate extremist, but the extremist here of love and grace. So what do we do in the face of this zeal, this extremism of love of faith, this zeal for others? Well, I don't know about you, but my first thought is my life looks very dark compared to him. I don't have that zeal for love and grace. My life is not marked by that. My life is not marked by an extremism of love and grace, but on the one hand, an apathy born of self-interest, and on the other hand, an extremism born of self-righteousness. And so the first thing I need in the light of Jesus is to find forgiveness. And that's what he came to do. He came to shine the light of forgiveness into the darkness of our wrongdoing. On the cross, when he died, he would take on himself all that we've done wrong, all that we did wrong in our war on him, and he would suffer the punishment that our self-interested apathy and our self-righteous extremism deserve. So we find forgiveness in the extremist of love and grace, but we also find an example. We struggle with this, don't we? We struggle with being all out for other people because we're afraid. We're afraid that if I give my all, what if they take advantage? What if I have nothing left for myself? And that fear leads to defensiveness, to self-protection, to division, and then on to conflict. So in this light, the example of Jesus just seems like an unrealistic ideal. It's almost like, and pardon the pronunciation here, if Javier Sotomayor came and showed us the example of what he can do. Does anyone know who he is? I'm imagining Boswell, because he's a great quizzer. He also was here in the first service, so he would know this. He is the high jump world record holder. His height, 2.45 metres. That's staggering. My height is 1.97 metres. So imagine a bar another half a metre taller than me and leaping over that. And if he came along to do that, we'd say, wow, that's amazing. But we wouldn't want it to be an example, would we? I certainly wouldn't. When I was at primary school, do you remember those wooden benches with the bobbly bits at either end? Do you remember them? And then the gym teacher, who obviously was a sadist, told you to jump over. I couldn't do that, so I just waited till they turned away and just kept stepping over it. Or that vaulting horse, that instrument of torture and humiliation. It was called a vaulting horse. When I did it, it should have been called a scrabble up one side and just flop over the other side. And as for now, I've got no hope of meeting Javier's example. I barely leave the ground when I try to jump. All that really happens when I try to jump is I look a bit taller. No, it wouldn't be any good. But is that what it's like to look at Jesus' example of love and grace? No, it isn't. Because Jesus is not just an example. He makes it possible for us to start being extremists of love and grace, to be zealous for others. Why is that? Because if we receive him, if we accept his love and grace to us, and he leaves us with that choice, if we accept it, it gives us the ultimate safety net. Because it says to us, God in Jesus is zealous for you. He is extremely committed to you. Now that's an amazing thought. Because we read here that he is the wonderful counselor. He is the mighty God, the everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace. He is the God of gods, the King of kings. He can do all things. But then we also discover at Christmas that he is crazily committed to his people. He is extremely committed to them. He has a zeal for their good. So if I choose to follow Jesus, to be one of his people, suddenly I know that I can take the risk of being an extremist of love and grace, of having zeal for the blessing and salvation of others. Why? Because if they do take advantage of me, or if I'm left with nothing for myself, I know the one who has committed everything for me. This Christmas, we can discover, we can choose to receive, we can choose to zealously love the one who zealously loved us so that we can zealously love others. Amen.